10th, 1984. Mr. Hope, do you want to talk about your where you came from and where you went to school, grade school and high school?
Okay. Well, I was born in Zen Prairie on a visit when my mother decided to go home to her family doctor in 1912. We were living in Edgerton at the time. My dad was superintendent there. We were there from 1912 to 1920 when he took the position of superintendent of the schools at Janesville. And for 7 years, we were in Janesville before he was appointed registrar here at the university in 1927. Then he became dean of the Extension Division about 1937 or 8, and in his latter years in the 1940s, he was named Director of Public Services, and he passed away in 1948. I've been in education since 1938. I retired in 1978 when I'm still doing some consulting work, so I try to keep track of what's going on in the world of education. The thing that impressed me most about my dad was his ability as a public speaker and his devotion to the Wisconsin idea, which started with Ben Heiss, as you know. But he probably spent more time than anybody before or since espousing this idea that the boundaries of the university are the boundaries of the state. He probably gave more speeches all around the state, I used to drive him occasionally, than anyone I know of, and he was tireless in that regard. In fact, he was gone so much, I didn't see him as much as I hoped to, but he was a great guy, and people who were students here remember him well, and so do the those who are still living who were in the university at the time he was on campus. His motivation seemed to be that as a graduate of this institution in 1907, he always wanted to get back here and be one of the administrators. And he succeeded in 1927, 20 years after graduation, and unfortunately, high blood pressure caught up to him, and just before all these miracle drugs came in, he passed away.
In terms of the Wisconsin idea, did he ever comment on whether it was practiced the same throughout his tenure at UW or whether it declined and peaked? Or
well, he was involved, of course, with the legislature considerably. Glenn Frank and Dykstra would send him up to the Capitol, and I think he recognized that he had to be pretty persuasive as far as the university budget was concerned, and to let them know that on campus, we were not 90% communist, as was the charge back in the days when we were undergraduates from 30 to 34. The interesting aspect of that is that some of these classmates of mine tell me how much influence he had on them to keep them in school when the depression was so prevalent. And finding them part-time jobs or helping them one way or another, it seemed to me he always had an open door for students and for anybody from any part of the state, particularly from Edgerton and Janesville, who came to see him.
Now, what was his position at that time?
He came as registrar.
Registrar.
First, yeah.
And so he would see the students
in that capacity.
What was the registrar, what did the registrar do? What were his responsibilities?
Well, that was the enrollment of students, of course, and getting all of the incoming freshmen lined up for what goes on when orientation takes place, using upperclassmen, of course, as part of that freshman orientation. And I was involved in that, too, and helped work at 35 cents an hour in the basement of Bascom Hall in those days, in the summertime prior to the opening of school. The people who worked with him, like Margaret Ellingson and Bell Alexander, became institutions in effect too, because they worked closely with all the implications of registration at the university.
Yes, I have a tape out from Ms. Ellingson right now.
I see.
Yeah. How was it being the son of a of an administrator at UW.
Well, you should ask my three kids.
That's right.
There are problems, more so at the secondary level, when you're the son of the superintendent. But in a larger institution, that seems to be incidental. And I don't think anybody felt that I was getting any favors particularly. I became pretty active in a wide variety of things, including the YMCA and the Senior Council and some athletics. So I kept pretty busy. In fact, athletics were probably more important to me than my academics, I'm afraid to say. But I managed to graduate.
Well, we'll talk about athletics in a minute. And getting back to your father for 1 second, you said that he would help students who were thinking of dropping. Now, why would they go to the registrar if they were thinking of dropping?
Well, I think he had the kind of personality and the willingness to listen that a number of other people seemed to lack. And it doesn't take long for young people to appreciate someone like that. And if they feel that he would listen and try to help them, they'd come back again. And that seemed to be his attraction, at least as I gathered.
Okay. So you were raised in Madison?
Well, after 1927, yeah.
Did
graduated from Madison Central High School, which is now defunct.
That's right.
Yeah.
MATC now.
Yeah.
When did you decide to attend college?
Well, that was a foregone conclusion in our family. Sister, who was 2 years older, was here at the university, graduated in the class of 32. And, of course, I fell in line. In fact, we couldn't afford to go out of Madison, had to live at home and go to school. And I'd always had a great deal of admiration for the University of Wisconsin, having followed athletics here very closely.
So it was never a question of going to another school.
That's right.
It was UW all the way.
That's right.
Did you have a career goal in mind when you came?
Well, that's interesting. I started in geology. And then I kind of lost interest in that, so I went into pre-med. I got as far as organic chemistry and decided that wasn't for me either. And I was taking history courses. I came up with a history major and graduated with a joint major in history and physical education. And then there were no jobs in 1934. So I tried selling insurance in Milwaukee. But I first enrolled in law school for a couple of years because I could get board and room at a fraternity house, Phi Gamma Delta. But the lawyers then weren't getting any jobs either, and I wasn't too interested. So I tried that insurance function in Milwaukee for about a year and came back, got my master's degree, and did get a job in Sheboygan in 1938.
What did you get your master's
in? In educational administration. Yeah.
It was the School of Education. Everything was the Department of Education.
That's
were there
right.
Specialties within it?
Oh, yes.
I mean, did your degree say educational administration?
A master's degree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll get into that in just a little bit. I want some more of that. Let's go back to your undergraduate days a little bit. Okay, you enrolled your first semester. You were an LNS.
Yeah.
So the courses you took were pretty much required courses?
Well, yeah. Usual English, and I took French, and geology, history.
So it was just, you had to take the English, that was required.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you could take a language, was that it?
Yeah.
Or did you have to take a language?
No, well, in those days you had to take 2 years of foreign languages, the minimum. So I took 2 years of French.
So it was normal to take them your first 2 years?
Yeah.
And then you had electives within the
yeah.
Social science.
Or science.
Or science. Mm-hmm. Where did you go for books and supplies?
Down at the bookstore, which is now where the library is, across the street from the present bookstore.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And that was a university?
And Brown's bookstore was on that same corner.
Uh-huh.
Those days too.
Were there any others?
Bookstores? Well, those are the two I went to.
Okay.
I don't recall.
So you started classes. In your freshman and sophomore years, how were classes generally set up? Like, were they lectures?
Yeah, they were lectures with quiz sections.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they call them teacher aides. What do they call them now?
Graduate assistants, TAs.
I don't recall that term in those days. But they were graduate students were assigned to handle the quiz sections, but I was fortunate to have in two or three times the professor as handling my quiz section as well. And I think we had much closer contact in those days because there weren't so many of us.
Yeah, right. Also, the professor actually handled some of the quiz
sections. That's right.
And if you were lucky enough, you'd happen to get into one of those.
That's right.
How accessible were professors?
Well, I never felt that they were difficult to reach. Jake Harvey Sorum, who was in chemistry, to me was one of the best teachers I ever had, was always available, it seemed to me. And Max Otto, could go and talk to him, or his assistant, Carl Bigholt. Those two had a great influence on my thinking.
I'm interested in that. I've heard a lot about Max Otto.
Yeah.
What about graduate assistants? Were they easy to...
Oh, yeah. They made themselves available for us in quiz sections to... when we fall asleep, we find out later what they said. No, I'm kidding. But it was interesting. I think the social life of being in a fraternity and the athletic program, the intramurals, and meanwhile, the basketball squad as a freshman and a sophomore when we opened the new field house. And those were primary interests, probably more so than they should have been in terms of the time I spent.
We're going to get into athletics and just look at the pictures and we'll cover that. How did you dress
the class? Oh, informally. Sweaters, usually. Blue jeans weren't so prevalent in those days, I don't recall.
What about
ties? We had slacks.
Did men wear ties?
Oh, some did, but fraternity I was in, a lot of the guys wore coats and ties. I kind of followed suit part of the time, but I always preferred to be informal.
What about women?
Well, they were skirts and sweaters. Mm-hmm. A little longer skirts in those days, I think.
Mm-hmm. What about, like, makeup and jewelry?
Oh, yes. Particularly at the social events. Mm-hmm. In fact, all the parties at our fraternity were formal.
Well, they were.
Yeah.
And that meant tuxedo?
Yeah.
Did you have your own tuxedo?
No, it was my dad's. He was about my size.
What about the rest of the guys? Did they have their own, or did they?
Some of them did. Now, Fred Maytag had just about everything.
Washer and repair all
yeah,
that he did.
Right.
Did he have a washing machine?
Not in the house, although I think we got one secondhand from him one time. But that was a great experience because we had to, in order to keep that house open, and a lot of them closed during the Depression. We'd go down on Friday night to the grocery stores and buy up the produce that we were going to throw away and bring it back and use it at the house just to keep the cost down. If those guys knew how little it was costing us to feed them, they probably would have gone on strike. But we wanted to keep them in the house, and most of them that could afford $50 a month got their room and board for that.
Oh, that was interesting.
Yeah.
You said a lot of them went under the Depression.
Oh, yeah.
Is that just because...
When I came in the fall of 1930, was pledged to a fraternity, there were 25 cars there by the kids. The next year, there were two. A lot of those kids were gone. They just couldn't stay in because they didn't have the money.
And that was because parents might have lost their jobs.
That's right.
Did that happen to anybody that you knew?
Yes, there were a few, I've lost track of them, who were in that freshman class that I was in, who didn't come back.
So it's safe to say, especially with your dad's registrar during that period, that the decline in enrollment that you can look at through the numbers was the primary mitigating factor was the Depression.
That's right, and if you look in that 1934 Cardinal, you'll see that they were discussing how much cut would the faculty take just to keep a job and keep going, and they didn't argue about it. They knew they had to take
cuts. That was the waivers. Did your father have to take a waiver as well?
I don't know that he did. I wasn't very conversant with that.
How important were grades to you?
Well, they were more important to people, the gals I went with, than to me.
Oh, really?
I did better in my freshman year, really, than I did in my sophomore and junior year. But then as I got a little older, I did much better. especially in graduate school.
What about your parents? How important were they?
Oh, they were important. Mother was involved in the university women's groups, and the social events of the university's faculty were quite obvious to us as kids.
Name your favorite classes in your area of specialization in history.
I think it was Higbee's History of the West. He had a chuckle that was most contagious, and he knew it so well, and it was easy to follow him.
Did you talk about Frederick Jackson Turner in that?
Yes.
Was he an advocate of the frontier area?
Oh, yes. Yeah. But Higbee knew the Civil War so well, and history of the South and history of the West, that was very intriguing to me.
What was your favorite course outside of your area?
Chemistry 1A and B with Harvey Sorum.
Okay, answer quickly on that. Tell me a little bit about the class and about Harvey Sorum.
Well, Harvey had that personality that attracted people. He had a considerable patience, particularly in lab, when we were doing knowns and unknowns. And I think his lectures were always interesting, and his follow-up with small groups kept me very interested.
Yeah, you were not a chemistry...
No, I was a pre-med at the moment, but...
Oh.
And zoology, too, was one I enjoyed a lot, part of that pre-med
course. And who taught that?
That name escapes me. I'm sure I don't know.
Let's go through some of the history professors that you've had.
Well, I certainly recognize Hicks and Eason. In fact, Eason taught that English history in my freshman year. That's a tough course.
This is your freshman year. Let's talk a little bit about the course and about Eason.
Yeah.
What can you tell me about the course? Why was it a tough one?
Well, I couldn't get too interested in some of the details of ancient English history. I don't know why. I was more inclined to be interested in American history.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably was the basic reason. But Eason was a good lecturer. And he, too, knew his subject thoroughly. I noticed he lasted a long time.
Yes, he did.
The chairman of the department and so on. And Bob Reynolds, I thought, was an excellent professor.
Oh, what did you have him for?
One of the American history courses.
Why was he a good...
Well, he, too, had the ability to answer questions that were raised. He was quite concise. I think that's a function.
How was he as a lecturer?
I thought he was good. Yeah.
Now these are all of the big classes. Did you have any of these people in seminars or in small?
No.
In your junior and senior year, when you were you had declared your major, when did you declare after sophomore year?
Yeah, about the middle of my junior year.
How did courses differ from history courses?
Well, they were more specific, certain areas of history rather than just general.
What about the size of the classes?
They were smaller.
What do you mean by smaller?
Well, we had 25, 30 in a class at the moment.
Were they lecture, discussion, combination?
Combination of both, yeah. And having a person like Gladys Borchers in speech, for example, those are always small classes.
We'll talk about her in a second. So when you took the freshman and sophomore history course, it was more a lecture, and then the discussion would follow with either the TA or the professor if you were fortunate enough to
do that. That's right.
In your junior and senior year, it was smaller classes with sort of a lecture discussion format.
That's right.
Where would the professor stop and ask questions, or would students interrupt?
Both, yeah. I think we were very free to interrupt and raise questions, particularly with people like Max Otto and Carol Bagel.
Okay, let's talk about Max Otto. He is, of course, becoming one of the famous characters.
Oh, yes. We have a farewell message from him in 1934 that's being exhibited during these next few days. They've got an exhibit down there in the Union. You see the Union Center. And Max had a wonderful way with words, and he was an artist. He could illustrate as he was talking with that chalk. Oh, yes. He'd go back into ancient times with the prehistoric animals. He could draw one up there in about 2 minutes. And he made it so interesting that everybody wanted to get into his courses.
Okay, now, I was talking to the gentleman this morning from Shawnee. He was warned before he came out of Madison. Radical from the communists.
Oh, yes.
And
Minkelzahn was here, you know, in the experimental college.
What about Max Otto? Now, he had a reputation as being an atheist and other things. Did he ever display that in his classes?
No, I don't think so, but he certainly had the ability to raise questions in our minds and always emphasize the fact that decisions on this kind of thing were up to the individual.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't, I never felt he was really an atheist, but he certainly wanted to have people recognize the importance of scientific discovery and evolution. And that was my impression.
Also, he talked about evolution.
Oh, yeah.
What was the stand on evolution like among students and the society in general?
Well, I think some of the most conservative people I know now were very liberal in those days and were very interested and did believe that evolution had a major part in our background. I didn't find any fundamentalists
so
in the
wasn't
group that I associated with.
You weren't a heretic if you advocated evolution?
No, not at all.
And did other professors talk about it as well?
I don't recall, except for Bigholt and Otto.
Okay, getting to Bigholt, John.
Yeah.
Interviewed Mrs. Bigholt.
Oh, is that right?
Absolutely one of the most delightful people I've ever had the chance
to
talk to. Let's talk about her late husband for just a few minutes. Now, what did you have him for, and what were your impressions of him?
I had logic with him, and so did my wife later. But she didn't do too well in logic, and I point that out whenever we have a difference of opinion. I got an A in logic, and you didn't. But anyway, Carl was, your first impression is kind of a Prussian, big fellow with a strong voice, and you got, the first impression was that he might be pretty tough to work with. But see, once you were in his small group sessions, he had that Socratic approach of continuing to raise questions to cause you to think and try to find answers, and that applied beautifully, I thought.
So he would use that in the class?
Yes.
And you would have to respond? So you would put him up there about all kinds of
things? Oh, yeah.
Person.
Sure. You bet.
Now, before... you attended for 4 years?
Yes.
Did you live at home?
Yes. Well, I was in the fraternity in my senior year for one semester.
Oh, so you lived at home the rest of the time?
Yeah.
Did you find that suited? Would you rather have been anywhere else?
Well, I had so much freedom to come and go. We lived out on Regent Street near the stadium and always walked to the university and back. I didn't find it was inhibiting as some people did. I guess the fact that both my mother and dad had been in the university and felt that youngsters should have, at that age, freedom to make their own decisions had some effect. I did want to get away in my senior year and live away from home, and that worked out too.
Which fraternity?
Phi Gamma Delta. 16 Langdon.
Still there?
Yeah, yeah. That house was designed originally by Frank Lloyd Wright, who was a cousin of Richard Lloyd Jones, who was a Phi Gamma. And Jones, you know, had the State Journal here at one time, and his two sons, Jenkin Lloyd Jones and Richard Lloyd Jones, were there when I was there.
Did you pledge that last year then, or were you early?
I pledged as a freshman.
You remember it?
Yeah, I was president of the fraternity my senior year.
Oh, you were? Okay, let's go through your fraternity career for a little bit. You pledged in your freshman year. You went through Hell Week.
Oh, yeah.
Let's describe the process and how you become a fraternity member from day one. You decide to join one, or?
Well, there was a lot of rushing. You had invitations to go to various houses. And
what
I guess...
What do they do when they get you in these houses?
Oh, they give you coffee and talk to you and show you the place and tell you why this is the greatest fraternity and so forth. The usual palaver, which I got involved in as Russian chairman and pledge trainer later. And it was a great deal of competition for fraternity people, particularly when things were tough and they were trying to get enough members to keep the house financially sound. And we did pretty well with the houses that remained on campus at that time were still going. And a number of them have come back since that closed up at the time.
Yeah. Okay, so then you went through the rush week.
Yeah.
And then what happened then?
Well, we were expected to we were called skunks, of course. We were expected to do whatever the actives.
Was everyone called skunks?
I mean, just the pledges.
For all fraternities, they were called skunks?
I don't know what they called.
Okay. But you were called skunks.
Yeah.
Okay. What did you have to do? Or what did the skunks?
Well, for example, the captain of the gymnastics team broke both wrists when he fell off flying rings. And I was assigned to take care of him. Well, you can imagine, with a guy with two broken arms, including shaving him and the toilet and everything else. What a routine. But the...
Well, you were going into medicine, so...
Yeah, I guess that is it. But we had a very congenial bunch of guys, many of whom I'm still in contact with. Some will be here this reunion.
What about other types of hazing? Was there any hazing that went on?
There was some. I don't think it was too prevalent in our fraternity. Hell Week involved one night where you'd go on an all-night hunt for something. I spent about 10 hours out in the two cemeteries finding certain gravestones. One guy had to find something that he knew was in the co-op, so darn fool broke into the co-op, was arrested, put in jail.
Well, in terms of some of the more horror stories on hazing,
Well, we heard about them in some of the other houses where some kids got really dehydrated or completely physically exhausted, the kind of hazing, the paddling existed. These guys always had a paddle.
And paddling, you just spank the guys on the buttocks?
Oh, yeah, but sometimes they got overly enthusiastic, including bruises and... one of the guys in our house who was a football fullback was in a history quiz section with me, and they insisted we go to class no matter what we looked like. And I'll never forget the day he was in class. He started to answer a question, he crawls on the sleeve, right? It was just Hell Week.
So that was Hell Week. And then when you go through Hell Week, are you automatically in before Hell Week starts? Is it
Well, you're not initiated. You're not initiated until after.
And then, but if you go through it, you're pretty much here.
Yeah, then they have a very formal initiation ceremony, alumni and so on.
Okay. So there's a swearing in, kind of like?
Yeah, the secret the words and so forth, and in a room up in the top floor where you wore a robe to go to chapter meeting.
Oh, really?
That type of thing. I guess it's still going on.
Did you have to wear, at the initiation, were you dressed in any way?
Enrolled,
or?
No, not the formal initiation.
But
when we got into that chapter room, we had to wear a robe.
What were they, dark, like fire robes?
These were purple. The colors were purple.
So once you became a member, as a non-resident member, what advantages were there to you for joining?
Well, the social life, primarily.
What did that
The athletic life.
Let's talk about social life. Yeah. What did the social life consist of?
Well, all of our parties were formal, and that's a three-floor house, and the downstairs, what's called the Great Hall, looks out over the lake, is where we're supposed to keep our dates. They weren't supposed to be up on second or third floor, but somehow they were up there. In those days, they were pretty strict on any drinking in the house. And somehow there was some beer, and but the parties were could be more formal than they are nowadays.
So a party might consist of you get your date from you bring, or invite sorority houses or did you
well
bring your
no
own
you
dates?
Get your own date.
You get your own dates. Okay, you bring your date to the party.
Yeah.
And then there's what do you do at the party?
Well, there's a lot of dancing.
You listen for phonographs or?
Well, they sometimes had a small orchestra. They weren't too expensive, but most of the time records.
Okay, and then you drink soft drinks or
yeah
some of the etherized needle beer, I guess they
oh
call
yeah
it.
That. that spiked near beer was called.
That's
see, we went through the period when Prohibition was repealed in 1933. We were at a National Convention in Washington. Just before that happened. A lot of these guys had booze in their closets and in the Wardman Park Hotel.
What is the difference between before and after Prohibition?
Well, during before Prohibition, there was a lot of going down to Jenny Justo's and places like that where there was speakeasy. And every student knew where they were. And, Friday nights was like it is now. It's a good night for social life going out in the town. So there used to be Hollywood and Hollywood at the beach. Dance places, 10 cents a dance in those days, which was popular.
Now, Hollywood, that's one I've never heard of. Hollywood and Hollywood at the beach.
Yeah, Hollywood at the beach is on Madonna. Hollywood was about, well, you know where that, Stop and Go sign is out there on the Beltline, where they've had some accidents. Just as you turn left there, there was a building, a dance hall. It's no longer there. Some other kind of building there now.
And students would go out
there. My date was the gal I married, actually, was very interested in dancing.
And what do you mean a dime dance?
Well, you'd get so many tickets. If you had 50 cents, you could dance 5 times.
This is one of these things where there are girls there and you come in?
No, you bring your date.
And they charge you a dime to dance on the floor?
That's it. Oh, good artist. We like the music in those days.
Yeah. Never heard of that before. And that was one of the places you'd go off campus.
Oh, yeah.
Were there any other places like that off campus? Not necessarily dance parlors, but other...
Oh, yeah. There, but not nearly as prevalent as they are now. The Cuba Club was quite popular.
Is it in the same location?
Right, same location, but entirely different.
And what was that, a supper club?
Well, it was kind of a bar and a supper club. Mm-hmm. Not nearly as large as it is.
Okay, let's get back to your craft life for a second. Who was in charge of the house? Was there a house mother? Or?
Well, we didn't have a house mother. In fact, the first year they ever had a graduate counselor was me, at 35. Up to that time, we had a couple living there. One was a cook, one was a janitor. And the graduate students in the house really were the people who laid down the rules, saw to it that we did some study.
Mm-hmm. What were the rules?
Well, I told you about the parties, mm-hmm. And then we had maintenance jobs to do. We had to put up the pier, take down the pier. We had to keep things relatively clean, although it wasn't...
Was there ever a problem with city inspections?
Not that I recall.
It was an issue at one point.
I guess it was.
We'll talk about
it. Scott was a good friend of ours.
How are you elected president?
Well, every year the officers were nominated in chapter meetings. And enough of them seemed to think they didn't want the job, so I got elected.
Now, you mentioned chapter meetings. This is where you go on the third floor with the rules. Who went to those things?
All the chapter members.
So that means everyone who's in the fraternity.
Yeah, and those who lived in town. There were several of us who lived in town. Town boys.
And how often did this chapter?
Once a week.
Was it a regular time?
Yeah.
When was it?
I think we met about 8 o'clock one night a week.
You said that there were rules. Did you have hours at all?
Only those that we imposed by ourselves.
What about... let's say you had a job cleaning the basement that week, and you didn't do it. What penalty might you...
Verbal,
okay.
Get chewed out.
What if you had... you had a cook at the place also?
Yes.
Who was the cook?
Nels LaPlante and Mrs. LaPlante. They were a very conscientious couple. Her cooking was average, I'd say. We were always critical of her. But we got along. Of course, she didn't have much to work with except what the treasurer and I would go and buy.
Yeah, right. That's sort of, when you got elected president, what were your responsibilities that year as president?
Well, to organize all the events of the House, to be sure that we had an athletic chairman, a social chairman, a House chairman. And we, of course, had a rushing chairman. That was an important part of the function. We rushed both semesters. And then trying to contact the alumni and keep the Madison graduate group active, which was all the time. Those were...
Now, you had all these different chairmen. Had you ever served in any of those chairman positions previously?
Well, I've been an athletic chairman.
Okay, well, tell me what you did.
Well, they had a wide variety of intramural sports, so everything you could think of. Not only, we had tackle football as well as touch football in those days, and basketball, volleyball, and let's see, water polo, swimming, tennis, track. It was quite an organization.
And you competed against yourselves and against other fraternities?
We competed against other fraternities.
Did you ever compete against dorms?
No, the dorms had their own league.
Yeah, and so they were separate?
Yeah.
Okay. What about the Jewish fraternities? Did you ever compete against them?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Some of them were very strong. See, the Badger Bowl, I guess, still exists. We always competed for the Badger Bowl.
Yeah.
They kept points.
Do you have a lot of leisure time?
Yes.
What did you do with it? Mm-hmm.
Well, there were matinees to take girls to for 25 cents.
Or at the Orpheum?
Yeah, Orpheum and Capitol. And there was a theater where that Wilbur store is next to where Manchester's across from the Capitol. There was a theater there.
Was it the Parkway?
Parkway, yeah.
Did you ever go to Harrisburg or anything?
Oh, yes. We had some active people in there. I heard you were in Harrisburg. Bill Purnell was a PIGAM who ran the clothing store down on State Street for many years. And he was probably one of the instigators of Harrisburg back in the early 20s.
Hmm. So it was still going very strong.
Yeah. Oh, at that time, yeah.
When you go to the Parkway, where did Horton Harrisburg normally perform? Is that the Parkway?
At the
Union. Was it usually the Full House?
Oh, yeah.
Was it
very popular?
Students.
The Badger of those days always played up Harrisburg, as well as the other dramatic groups.
Was it popular amongst students and faculty?
Oh, yeah.
What about some of townspeople today?
Well, I'm not. I wasn't aware that townspeople were too interested. But we had the students turn out.
Did you spend much time in the Union?
Yes. Yeah.
The
Rod Skeller was well. In fact, Jim Watrous in those days was painting the murals down there, Paul Bunyan and so on. And we had a number of activities going on there, and of course the military ball, the prom, well, the Green Hall.
Were those major social events?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Did you have orchestras?
Oh, sure. They had some of the famous orchestras in the country. They didn't cost so much in those days.
Did you dress? Those
were fun.
You said you went to movies. Were there any books, magazines, records, radio shows, movies, etc., that stand out in your mind as being particularly popular amongst the college-age students?
Well, of course, in those days, Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire, some of these famous women, actresses, were attractions.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have television before.
What about radio? Did you have radio?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Fred Maytag had one of the most expensive radios you could find anywhere.
Did Fred Maytag have a car for it?
Oh, yeah.
How many other people in the Fred had a car?
Only one other. At that time, although by 34, there were probably four, five or six.
So it started increasing during
that
time period here. And I would explain, of course, why most of the campuses are people. What about public transportation?
Well, they had streetcars. Mm-hmm. And You can get around that.
What about taxes?
They were available, but we didn't think we could afford them.
Yeah, right. you talked about alcohol. What's the prevailing attitude for tobacco?
Oh, it's very prevalent.
It is.
Everybody smoked. It's, in fact, one of the most popular songs up there was Smoke Dreams.
Did you go to any smokers?
No, I didn't smoke.
You did?
No.
We talked about sports. Let's get into that. What role did it play a big role in your life?
Yes, it did.
In
high school and first 2 years of college. Played at Madison Central football, basketball, track. And I played junior high in Jamesville. Went back, played against those guys. They were Big 8 kind of a school. It was only Big 7 in the state.
And what was that?
Well, since then, we've seen Kenosha are not in the Big 8. But there are now 4 Madison High Schools. In those days, there were 2.
What did you do in college in sports?
Just basketball.
Was that on the UW team?
Yeah, I was in the freshman. I didn't get cut anyway. Played all year. In my sophomore year, I was on the sophomore squad out at the field house for about 2 months. But I realized I was too small and I wasn't playing enough, so some of my former teammates here wanted to play in the major leagues in Madison, so we played a lot more basketball that way. And that took time away.
What's the major leagues in Madison?
Well, they have these recreational leagues. At that time, they had
run by the city of Madison.
Yeah, okay. City Recreation Department.
So
we played in all the gyms in Madison.
So it's not a university thing necessarily?
No.
What about intramural sports?
Well, those were, I've got to think of Art's last name. He ran the intramural program. A hockey coach at one time. He just retired here 5 or 6 years ago. We're there in the Fayette department, the girls. We operated out of the Red Gym, of course.
Yes.
Those days. But the organization of fraternity sports did involve a lot of activity from the time school began until it was out in spring. We played our softball games down there on the lower campus, 4 games going at once. The outfielders would run into each other. played during the noon hour.
Oh, really? Who umpired those?
Well, Art got graduate students, I guess, and Fayette people were
Who were women involved in
that
sports at all?
Relatively little. That was my impression.
How was your education financed?
Mine?
Yeah.
My friend.
Did you have...
I worked, though. I was a waiter at the union.
Next question. Go ahead. Tell me about it.
Yeah. Well, I was fortunate. I got a job there between my junior and senior year in high school waiting on the table. The union just got started.
What do you mean by waiting on table?
Well, Trip Commons and Great Hall, the private dining rooms.
Mm-hmm.
They call that Wisconsin Inn still, or Wisconsin Room?
Wisconsin.
I worked in all of those places.
But you'd go and take orders from people?
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't just the cafeteria stuff?
Oh, no.
Was it that way throughout the entire union?
Well, they had... cafeteria down where it is now, but it wasn't expanded the way it is.
How did the tables look? Did they have tablecloths?
Oh, yeah. The gals who trained us were very particular about how we set the table and how we serve. We must serve from the left and remove from the left.
Uh-huh. So it was,
if we didn't, we'd hear about it.
It was like going to a restaurant, in other words.
Oh, yeah.
And students and faculty both.
And parents. Yeah, our best tips were on weekends. We were only earning 35 cents an hour.
Yeah.
And if you broke a lot of dishes, they'd take something out of your paycheck. Well, most embarrassing experience occurred. I came up the steps of the Great Hall with a tray full of glasses, partly filled with water. I tripped on the last step. Glass and water all over the place.
No. Did they charge you?
No, they were pretty lenient at that point. I'd waited there for quite a long time, so I guess they gave me a little consideration.
A little leeway. What about student loans or scholarships?
No, I didn't have to make a take loan. A number of students did.
You just hand them out, huh? Scholarships.
Yeah, right.
How long did you have your part-time job?
Well, I worked as an undergraduate and as a law school student for 6 years. All 1930 to 1936, until I went off to Milwaukee to try to sell insurance.
Who was your supervisor?
The Thomases. There were a couple, Mr. and Mrs. Thomas. And, of course, Halverson was there at that time. But Mrs. Thomas was there.
How were they worked for? Thomases and Halverson. What about quarterbacks? Did you have any
time? Yeah. Oh, sure. I used to tell my kids when they came here, you got any problems, go see quarterbacks.
Probably the same advice many parents give.
Right.
What was it like being employed? I mean, was it a pleasant place to work?
Oh, yeah. See, the building was brand new in those days. We thought it was a great place because the nature of the city was quite different.
Were you aware of any problems that were developing between the merchants in Madison and the...
Not particularly.
Okay. People?
Not at that time.
Do you remember any memorable pranks from your attorney days and anything like that?
Well, we always had homecoming decorations. And we devised a homecoming decoration which said, "It's Ohio's ass." We had a picture of the real one. And Scott Goodnight really raised him up with the
man. Well, let's talk while we're getting into Scott. Tell me, what did he say?
Well, he said, "That's hardly representative of the student body. You're giving the wrong impression. I want you to take that down immediately." Well, we left it up until it didn't come to this whole room.
Did he know that you left it up?
Well, I don't think he knew. He made his blast and then he was busy with it.
What kind of person was he?
He was a likable guy. He and Dean Troxell, Dean of Women, were always approachable. And you've heard of the rocking chair incident?
Yes.
Yeah. Well,
did that sort of characterize his...
Yeah, I think so. Then? He was
So he was a strict disciplinarian.
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah.
But he was appreciated as a result too.
Okay, by
the student body,
I think so.
Yeah.
What about by the faculty? Do you have any inkling about how?
Well, my dad had a lot of admiration for him, and I think that's prevalent among faculty. Yeah. I'm sure there were some who were critics, like they are now. Is it Goldberg?
Ginsburg.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the people, some of the time.
Right.
What about Troxell? Anything on her?
Oh, she was a lovely gal. The gals, the women's organizations were all under her thumb, so to speak, and the gals I knew in my class now spoke very highly of Dean Troxell.
What about President Frank?
Well, my dad thought he was the greatest brain that ever came along.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He had some idiosyncrasies. He'd never had a dime in his pocket. Somebody had to buy his lunch. And he always wore those white spats. He was quite formal. He had aspirations politically. But he was very outspoken, an excellent orator, very convincing. But he didn't have that common touch with the legislature. And Bill La Follette became antagonistic toward Frank. So those are the recollections I have.
How was he amongst the students? What did the students think of him?
Well,
for you and what you could
I
say
think,
for other people?
You can talk to a number in our class. They felt that, that here was a great man with considerable ability, but they weren't sure he was approachable. Now, Bill Blazer can tell you a story where the university was under attacked by John Chappell of Appleton. And Bill had talked to my dad about forming a truth squad to go out of the state. And they did do that, but at one point Bill missed the early morning departure, so he called up Glenn Frank. Well, he grudgingly apparently gave Bill a ride, because he was going up that way anyway, but Bill said he hardly spoke a word all the way up there. He was too involved with some other things. And that's, I think, a characteristic that he may not have recognized himself, because he was so intellectually fine. He wrote some very interesting books. Have you seen it?
Yes, I have. Yeah,
and unfortunately, he was killed, you know, this son.
What about any other staff members, coaches, secretaries, house fellows?
Well, Meanwell was a character, believe me.
Tell me about Meanwell. Yeah, he was another controversial one.
You bet. He was really a dynamo. And boy, if you didn't do exactly what you were supposed to do on that floor, no matter who you were, he'd let you know. But once in a while, I think he was a small man himself. I think he had some sympathy for his little guys, the bigger guys. But of course, in those days, the basketball players weren't pretty big compared to what they are now. Yeah. When we got into that field house one day, he had close practices. He was up on one of these big stands with his little megaphone, yelling like mad at us. He looked down, and somehow a couple of girls had come in there, standing there with their mouths wide open. He said, "Oh, nuts." He threw down his megaphone, climbed down, went to the locker room, didn't come out for 20 minutes.
Why not?
Temper.
Oh, just temper. Because they were there.
And he and Spears, you know, couldn't get along. Spears was a football coach.
Why couldn't they get along?
Well, there were guys who were out for football, and meanwhile thought you'd combine themselves to basketball, mm-hmm. and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And I don't know the background of their conflicts, but it was quite prevalent. Guy Lohman was a different kind of guy. He had the respect of everybody. Baseball coach. Yeah. He was a very kind. I had some graduate classes with him.
What was his personality like?
Very quiet, assuming, but attractive. And Jones, the track coach, was a lot like him. He had excellent results.
Certainly two of the more notable figures in the history of Massachusetts. What kind of reputation did women's hockey
have? Well, Blanche Trilling was the chairman of the Lathrop Hall. And there were quite a few gals I knew who were here as my head and took part in a variety of activities for the dance.
It's fun to find something to do.
Yeah.
Give me your impressions of the Cardinals.
Well, the Cardinal was always being challenged, I should say, in those days. It was liberal. Aldrich Revelle, whose wife is with us, had a reputation for being quite outspoken and expressing points of view that were too strong. Jimmy Pash was quite mild in the Cardinal. Helen Fleming Johnson, who's going to be here. All these people were very active in journalism.
What was your opinion of it?
Well, I enjoyed reading it.
Did you read it every day?
Oh, sure.
Brothers read it every day?
Oh, yeah. The Cardinal was a popular.
So it was a thing.
It was expected.
Read?
This is the way you kept up with what was going on.
Okay. Yeah. So students generally read it.
Oh, yes, I think so.
So even though they might object to it, they get angry.
And of course, the Cap Times and the State Journal were fighting each other at that time. I mean, in fact, Bill Eveu was a FIGAM too.
Why were they fighting each other?
Well, they split on the La Follette issue, the Progressive Party. And Bill Eveu took back his own newspaper, having worked for Richard Floyd Body Jones on the State Journal first when he got out of college. And Eveu was done. Several of my opportunity over the years. And so did Lloyd Jones.
Were those two newspapers read by students?
Well, in terms of national affairs and state affairs, they were particularly interested in Mr. Madison Suits, local affairs.
Were you interested much in national affairs?
Oh, yeah.
Did you listen to the radio? Would that be your main source as a student of getting national?
That was it.
And unless you read the State Journal?
Papers, yeah. And some of the guys had subscriptions to the Chicago Tribune. I don't think anybody has New York Times. as I recall. Christian Science Monitor was there.
What about the Badger?
Some of my friends worked on the Badger, and in fact, my best man was a business manager of the Badger. And I think a great percentage of the class managed to find enough money to pay for the Badger.
So that was something that you really did.
Oh, yeah.
I heard they had trouble.
Yes, they did.
And was that again because of the lack of funding?
Oh, sure. The publisher looked like that. Expensive, attempt to sell ads, and so on. Time consuming.
Was the Octopus still on?
Yes.
Did you read that?
Oh, sure.
Some
of the corny jokes I still use, I guess.
Was it a popular magazine?
I think so,
They did mainly satire.
Yeah.
I don't really look closely at that. What about student clubs and organizations? You've spoken about Harrisburg and you're attending that. Were you in any yourself?
Well, I was on the YMCA board for 3 years. The old Y.
By the park, where the parking lot is.
Where the parking lot is now. Just move over here. And C.B. Hibbert and Bob Shepard were good influences.
Now, the Y is an interesting question. I mean, it clears some things up for me. Young Men's Christian Association, was it religious?
Yes, I conducted a series of lectures, brought some people in. What was it called? It's part of a YMCA project. I was humanities chairman, my lord. And there were some pretty important campus figures on that whiteboard. Hugh Oldenburg, my brother-in-law, was in class of 33, was active on the whiteboard. Brett Sewer, people like this who'd had high school experience at High Y, here at the old YMCA in Washington, probably carried their interest over into the university YMCA.
Was there any problem with the fact that a lot of Y activity was university associated and it was a religiously affiliated organization? Was that ever brought up as an issue?
To my knowledge, we didn't have any Jewish boys in Y at that time, and I don't think we had any here. I don't know that we had any Catholic boys. That's changed, of course, over the years.
So this was sort of an accepted thing.
And the YW.
It was never an issue.
My wife was not on the YW board.
Skip some of these areas. Describe prevailing student attitudes. Let me read you the whole question. I'll go one at a time. Toward women, Jews, blacks, and other racial minorities, out-of-state students, foreign students. Did you ever witness or were you ever aware of discrimination in any of
those?
Let's go through them. Start out where you'd like.
Well, the reputation of what was called the New York Jews caused a lot of obvious discrimination, feelings and expressions that I don't think you hear today. On the other hand, we knew that Hillel had a different group who had a different approach, who were more, shall we say, moderate, not as extreme. So there was that differentiation in the minds of most of us.
So
the Jewish population.
There were sort of two camps.
Yeah.
Now, that's very interesting. Now, I've heard, what is it about the New York Jews that people generally found objectionable?
Well, they were too pushy and too aggressive and demanding in the eyes of the students, as they saw them in classes where they were trying to make an impression or to rule the roost or get themselves in positions of leadership without by using any means possible. All that kind of thing we talked about, I'm not sure.
What about political? Was there any political aspect to that as well?
Well, the accepted fact is that they were much more liberal, in fact, radical, than most of
it. So it was a two-pronged thing, personality and as well as ideology.
Right.
So
Wisconsin was very attractive to New York students.
So the Jewishness was never an issue?
Oh, yes.
The Jewishness was, sure. The fact that they weren't Christians.
Yeah.
And the other group, on the other hand, the Hillel Jews, were less bushy.
That's right.
Where were they from? Were they from a different part of the country, or
were they
attracted different?
There were some from New York, I'm sure, but there are a number from other parts of the country.
Do you know within that group? Do you know how, like, the Hillel Jews, if they had animosity toward that other group, or?
Well, I had that impression, although I haven't proved that, but they did get along together too well.
Which would make understandable, since they're two different sets of organizations. Blackstone?
No, relatively few. I think there were only three or four athletes, black athletes in those days.
But, I'm sorry, one more thing about the Jews. There were Jewish fraternities.
Yeah.
Now, what you've been describing to me and what other people today and yesterday have described to me, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I just want to see if this my observation is correct. Is it safe to say that there's more or less sort of a separate but equal thing going on, at least in terms of fraternities between Jews and
non-Jews?
I think
so. Yeah, we had respect for those fraternities. They did. But they seemed to conduct themselves about the same way we did with their parties and their social activities.
So there wasn't any
They were pretty much...
Animosity.
No, I didn't sense that.
They were pretty much what? I'm sorry.
They're pretty much a clique. They stayed within themselves for the most part. And we probably were cliquish too.
Mm-hmm. What about dating Jewish women?
Well, there was some of that. Jewish girls on campus.
What about the Jews dating
Some of that
women?
Too, yeah.
Okay, so that...
And the,
how
those
that
people
viewed?
Were guests at our parties.
Yeah. How was that viewed? Was that...
No problem. I didn't see any white-black couples doing anything.
That was something that probably was a little more recent.
Yeah.
Foreign students, were they an issue? Were there enough of them at that time?
Well, there were some. We were conscious of them, but not nearly the proportions we have now. I remember Indian. People from India here. The Far East. There didn't seem to be too many Japan. But we did have Europeans here.
Canadians,
yeah.
They're almost part of the other.
Yeah.
Foreign.
Right.
So close. What about the whole women's issue in terms of access to campuses? Do you ever note any problem women being discriminated against?
Well, there was the effort to include them in athletic events. It was just, they can have their fun by themselves. Co-ed activities were practically nil, except social. I don't know that they were excluded from any place.
So it wasn't an active plot on all right, I have one or two more things. I'm not going to get into your education thing, because you have to get back or you're going to get a ticket on your car.
Yeah.
And perhaps some other time we can cover that if necessary. I did want you to comment on Gladys Borges for just one moment.
A dynamic person who was very careful to help you understand just how to pronounce words and how to express yourself.
What did you have in
speech. Yeah. And the effective pause. She emphasized that. Here she was giving the speech. And the clarity of your tone. Being conversant to the point where people understood what you were saying in words that they could understand. She had a very effective speech.
Did you find that helpful in your
career? Oh, yes.
Was she a good speaker?
Yes, I thought so.
What was your opinion of her?
More dramatic than most of it.
Was your opinion of her shared by your class?
I think so. She was pretty tough when it came to grading. So
let's talk for
grumbled.
A minute about grades. Now, how was an A a pretty difficult grade? To
I thought so.
Yeah, so grade inflation was not a real one.
No,
not. What was an average GPA for a year for an average student?
Well, I would say the 3 point was an 8. Oh, I see. 1 point was a C, 2 point was a B. I'd say about 1.5.
What? Yeah. Lower than what you said.
Yeah.
Okay. What were your career goals? Oh, you already talked about that.
Yeah.
I was
very undecided going into my even my senior year. Did I really want to teach? Because the pay was so terribly low, and there was so few jobs. And I was not. Then I thought, well, maybe I should try to be a lawyer. That was really discouraged. Insurance business. My background did not look too good anyway. And the guys I worked for. Thank the Lord, they gave me $75 a month for subsistence. But a number of us, we've been to the university, were together in Milwaukee. In fact, my boss wanted me to start the Young Alumni Club in Milwaukee. I did. We went once a week. Still going.
I'll be darned.
But those were days when you were really doubtful. What can you do in the kind of life that you enjoy? And I always enjoyed, I'd done some little coaching with kids and so forth. And I enjoyed physical ed and athletics, so I had that joint major in education, physical ed. And came back, got my education administration and master's degree. And I teached Sheboygan for the same salary a bachelor's degree was in those days. All felt awfully lucky to have a job. Of course, none of us could get married in those days. We couldn't afford it, so. We single people in Sheboygan had a great time.
Was it fairly common among your experience with your own friends?
Well, some of them were quite definite. Because
yeah, how sure of people were of people of what they were going to do?
There were a lot more undecided people, in my opinion, than there are about careers, but they were experimenting. Mm-hmm. And the various courses they took and the people they came in contact with, I'm sure, had an influence. It was a trial and error process.
Comment, if you could,
on
what are your current thoughts on the quality and scope of education you received here in Denver?
I thought it was good, particularly at the graduate level. Some of those undergraduate courses were a waste of time, I thought. But when I got people like John Guy Fawkes and Glenn Eye and Ron Edgerton. I had two outlets. And Lois Nimick. You heard that name?
No, I haven't.
She had elementary education. In fact, they're having some sort of a program in honor of Lois Nimick here. One of the gals told me yesterday, coming up soon. She was an excellent person. I had been in secondary education, so, but if I was going to get my administrative degree, entry. I took her class. I had my eyes open. The difference between teaching subject matter and teaching children.
Yes. Yes, I heard that. Yeah. You were an ed admin, so was Glenn I your major professor or your...
Yeah.
Is that, what were they called?
Major.
Advisor or...
Yeah.
How was he?
Oh, I thought it was... Yeah. He's very... He has a lot of influence on helping me get jobs. And so did John Guy Fawkes. He was a character.
Yeah. He's a sort of a... Yeah, tell me a little bit about him.
Well, he was a big, blustery guy who took great pride in the fact that he had his doctor's degree when he was about 20, I guess. And a very intelligent guy and a terrific influence when it came to school finance. He wrote books and he had royalties coming in from everywhere. He was well-known all over the country. He was called upon to come to regional, state, national meetings frequently. Well-known around the state, and a lot of students had to work with the young guy, particularly those who had that inclination in education.
How was he to work with?
Well, he was the kind of a guy who'd come in into the old building. It was engineering and education. Mm-hmm. Sit on the desk, light a cigarette, and say, well, what do you got to say? What questions do you have? That was the guy. You had to come prepared with questions. He could take you apart, too. But I think we learned a lot from that guy. He was a very excellent student.
Was it becoming, and then this is, I promise, the last one. Was it becoming necessary to have a head-of-men degree in order to get into the administration?
Oh, yes. Yeah, certification requirements became more prevalent.
When did that start, you know?
Oh, I'd say in the 30s sometime.
Sometime right around where you were.
Yeah.
Okay, I promise you. This is Barry Tyker, UW History Project. I've just interviewed Mr. Fred Holt, a member of the class of 34, here for his number 5-0 reunion.